Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is freight considerations and traffic incident management. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for the audio know that you do need to mute your computer speakers, or else you'll be hearing the audio over the computer as well. Before we get started on today's seminar, I wanted to announce the availability of a new publication from the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations, the Freight Analysis Framework 3 User Guide. The guide provides basic instructions on how to use FAF data, products, and the web-based tabulation tool. The guide is available at the website on the slide shown on your screen, and in a moment, I will also type the website into the chat box. So now we'll go ahead and turn back to Talking Freight. Today we'll have five presenters: Paul Jodwin of the FHWA Traffic Incident Management Program, Vince Garcia of the Wyoming Department of Transportation, Rod Schmalhaus of Walmart, Paul Clark of the Florida Department of Transportation, and Rusty James of the Missouri Department of Transportation. Paul Jodwin is the Federal Highway Administration Traffic Incident Management Program Manager. Prior to working for Federal Highway, he served as the ITS Operations Manager for the Massachusetts Highway Department. Vince Garcia has had a 28-year career with the Wyoming Department of Transportation. He has worked for YDOT in the capacity of bridge design engineer, a roadway design team leader, the information technology program manager, and finally, the program manager of the GIS ITS division. Rod Schmalhaus is the general transportation manager for Walmart Private Fleet at the Western Regional Operations Center in Grantsville, Utah. He transferred to this role after working for Walmart as the Freight Flow Operations Manager in Loveland, Colorado. Prior to working for Walmart, he worked 18 years with an LTL trucking company, Nationsway Transport, working in a variety of roles from city dispatcher to outside sales to terminal manager and then intermodal manager. Paul Clark is the Deputy State Traffic Engineer over statewide traffic incident management, road rangers, and commercial vehicle operations for the Florida Department of Transportation. He serves as the chair of Florida's Commercial Motor Vehicle Review Board, hearing approximately 80 commercial vehicle citation cases per month. He is also a member of the ASHTO Technology Information Group on Towing and Recovery Partnerships. He has been involved with incident management and emergency management with FDOT since 2001 and has assisted with coordinating and preparing for responses to major disaster events in the state of Florida. Rusty James serves as the Incident Management Coordinator for Kansas City Scout. In that capacity, he is responsible for promoting traffic incident management in the Kansas City metro area. Prior to this role, he was the law enforcement liaison for the Central Region at the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. In that role, he worked with law enforcement agencies and the highway safety offices in Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri. Rusty retired from law enforcement after 30 years of service, with the majority of his career devoted to the area of traffic safety. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the presenters, and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, please type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will not be answering the questions during the presentations, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions that have been typed into the chat box. If we run out of time and are unable to address all questions, we'll attempt to get written responses from the presenters. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and a transcript, and I'll notify all attendees once the materials are posted online. One final note, Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, have your name typed into the chat box. I have included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits after the seminar. Please note that today's seminar is not yet on the AICP website, but I will send an email out to everybody in attendance once it is available. I also encourage everybody to download the evaluation form from the file download box and submit it to me after you've filled it out. So we'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is freight considerations and traffic incident management. As a reminder, if you have questions during the presentations, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered in the last 30 minutes of the seminar. Our first presenter will be Paul Jodwin of the Federal Highway Administration Traffic Incident Management Program.
Okay. Thanks, Jennifer. And thank you to the freight community for having us Tim folks join you today. There's some, I know there's, at least I know of several traffic incident management discipline practitioners on the line, and of course the presenters today are friends of mine who have agreed to help us out today. And and I also appreciate and thank Carol Keenan here who had the foresight to say, hey, this might be a good topic for trying to get some of these disciplines together. And so we're very excited about being here and presenting. I'm going to go through rather quickly, and I'm going to do my best, and I'm asking the other presenters to do it as well, to not use acronyms or to explain the acronym up front. So we're going to talk about TIM, which is Traffic Incident Management. I'm going to provide a brief overview of the national program and some of the national initiatives, and then we'll get to the speakers who are a lot more interesting than me. Sorry, I'm just a little technically challenged here for a second. So, you know, we've switched the discussion over the last few years from traffic incident management to being a mitigation, congestion mitigation program, to a responder safety program first, and then it's a congestion mitigation program. And we've got significant attention from the public safety community at the highest levels because we've switched the discussion. It's still a congestion mitigation and traffic incident management program, but it's also responder safety. There's a big impact on society. $399 billion, actually it's closer to $4 billion, was a recent AAA study last year. And it went up 83% from 2008 when the same study was last done. And a lot of that is the impact of freight, that traffic incidents have on freight. So, it's a big deal, and we're making it a big deal throughout the nation. We're having a lot of success. The national vision, we want to reduce or eliminate motorist and responder injuries and deaths. That's our number one priority. But then we want to promote rapid incident clearance, and also obviously reducing clearance time can reduce the vulnerability of motorists and responders, but also can get the system moving, the transportation system moving again. We firmly believe in a committee process, a multidisciplinary committee process. So, and that's developed through TIM programs, where the disciplines get together and talk to each other about how do we advance and get better at traffic incident management. And of course, just like everybody else, we're talking performance measurement and management through all our programs to encourage continuous improvement. And then, TIM, we're emphasizing TIM as a core mission, not just a pain-in-the-neck thing that folks have to do on the highway, that responders do at the highway. And by making it a core mission, we make it an important training component. So some of the key components of the national program are, a big deal for us this year will be, in the next few years, will be the SHOP 2 National TIM Responder Training Course that we're leading. We're going to basically get to thousands of responders over the next few years through train-the-trainer sessions. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, I think. We also have been all over the country over the last 2 years visiting the top 40 metropolitan areas. Actually, it's 42, top 42 metropolitan areas, talking to mid-level managers on how we can advance the country relative to traffic incident management and how their local programs can advance as well. A big deal for us is also outreach to senior executives, and we've had tremendous success with the state police colonels in this country and the fire chiefs, National Fire Chiefs Association. And we're engaging ASHTO and along with the advanced workshops we've done in the metropolitan areas, we've asked and met with top executives in many of those locations, probably about 70% of those locations that we visited, we visited with senior staff. Again, pushing traffic incident management and the value of safety and quick clearance. We're developing an incident management framework, TIM incident management framework, so that we can all, similar to the national response framework. We're involved in a training standardization, so that we're developing it at three levels, training at three levels, the responder level, mid-level manager, and senior level. And fresh out of the gate is a public outreach toolkit that's available on our website that will give responders and managers some tools that they'll be able to use to you know, reach out to folks relative to traffic incident management. And then, of course, performance measures is an ongoing project for all of us these days. Those are the locations of the top 40 metropolitan areas. So when I talk about TIM program, we talk about the response is on the slide on the right. Detection, verification, and all the components to an incident response. But on the left is that program, the development of relationships, needs assessments, training, and we feel that program is just as important, is very, very important to advancing the response capabilities of responders, and that's what we've been pursuing. I can't do a TIM presentation without introducing folks from the freight community that there is a national unified goal for traffic incident management, has three objectives: responder safety, safe quick clearance, and prompt, reliable, interoperable communication. Those are the three goals established by the NUG through the National TIM Coalition, and it has 18 strategies that support the NUG, if you will. Among the TIM community, the NUG is a common word, and basically, it's used as a framework for advancing the program throughout the country. Well, that's a nice picture. I think that is actually out of Wyoming, and we're going to have a Wyoming presenter here. But that's what their roadway looks like when they close their interstate in the Cheyenne area. So one or two trucks. I find it very interesting some of the things I learned in Wyoming relative to our rural or remote operations when you're dealing with traffic incidents on some of these rural roads. So I won't get into that too much, but there are the freight issues. Of course, many of you may be familiar with the freight corridors, but we do present this in all our workshops. And what, you know, and why, even if you're not a metropolitan area, the traffic incident management is important, even the rural communities, because of the flow of freight that goes through there. That's discussed in all our workshops and all our training. What gets measured gets performed, and we emphasize that as well. We have three standard relative to clearance time and secondary accidents: incident roadway clearance time, incident clearance time, which is when all responders are gone, and secondary accidents. And I'm racing along here because I know we have a lot of presenters, and I don't want to take up too much time, but I did want to take a second to talk about the SHOP 2 program, the National Traffic Incident Management Responder Training Program that we are involved with. Congress gave TRB, Transportation Research Board, millions of dollars to research better ways to manage the system. One of the very, very first projects to come out, if not the first project to come out of that program, out of the research, is the National Traffic Incident Management Responder Training Course that has been handed over to Federal Highway to implement. Myself and a few of my other team members will be pushing that out throughout the country. I won't go into the details, but let's just say it's been very well vetted, very well researched, and been very well received with the four pilot counts. It's an Everyday Counts initiative. If you don't know it already, what Everyday Counts is, it's a very important within the transportation community. It makes it a priority project, which means we have to have an aggressive implementation. So we're basically going to do 3 years of work and 2 years relative to train-the-trainer sessions. It's a priority project for ASHTO. International Association of Chiefs of Police expects to endorse it in September. And the Fire Chiefs Association, IAFC, has formally endorsed it just a few months ago. And then the National Volunteer Fire Council. We expect many others to endorse it as we go forward. So, very aggressive schedule. I won't go into the numbers right now, but we're being pushed pretty hard and very interested in going forward with it. There's the folks that are in the direct line of fire for Sharp 2, and that's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you, Paul. Paul and I are in the same room, so we're just switching around seats here. Our next presentation will be given jointly by Vince Garcia of the Wyoming Department of Transportation and Rod Schmalhouse of Walmart. So let me bring up your presentation, and then Vince, I will turn it over to you. All right, Vince, you can go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you very much. What I'm going to present to you is kind of maybe not necessarily directly in the line of incident management, but more of a pre-trip information system that we've created in Wyoming to help commercial vehicle operators. Our intent is to kind of prevent some problems. So for background information, Wyoming has a number of routes that are important in terms of commercial vehicle operators, but the most important are probably the interstates, and they're important due to the commerce. I think you saw that diagram that showed kind of the distribution of commerce throughout the states, and the interstates in Wyoming are significant among those. Of these, probably Interstate 80 is probably the most important. It's a major east-west corridor. We have about 11,000 vehicles per day. The route's noted because it has truck traffic in excess of 50%, and the interstate reaches about an elevation of about 8,600 feet in Wyoming, which is typically prone to bad weather. A study conducted several years ago, probably in more than 10 years ago, if memory serves, indicated that closures to Interstate 80 cost the economy in excess of $1 million per hour of closure. And that study was conducted at a time prior to Walmart having a distribution center near Cheyenne, so that estimate is considered to be very conservative. Routes in Wyoming often experience severe weather events. Most commonly, we see snow coupled with very strong winds that cause visibility problems, surface condition problems, and the wind by itself can cause numerous vehicles to be blown over. The closures are more common than we'd like, and this has a negative impact, obviously, on commerce. This is kind of just a slide that lets you know that these are a route in Wyoming, Interstate 25, that is typically prone to blowovers, and that this also happens a lot on Interstate 80. But in this event, we had five vehicles blown over at the same time, probably in about a 30-minute time frame. Unfortunately, that's not uncommon. Got a couple slides here, a couple pictures of images that show you from a bird's eye view what it looks like on a roadway when there's a blowing snow event. At the ground level, the visibility can be next to nothing. Whiteout conditions, very dangerous. This commercial vehicle operator portal that we put together, and I'm going to talk about, the genesis of this was a meeting that we had in Nevada with the I-80 Coalition. There were numerous CBOs that were invited to attend, and the coalition is comprised of the states of California, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, and Nebraska. We learned a great deal from this meeting from the commercial vehicle operators, and most importantly, we formed a working relationship with Walmart, and this spurred us to follow up after the meeting and work with them, learn a little bit more about their operations, and find out what we could do to help them be more successful in getting commerce through the state of Wyoming. What we've done is we've created this commercial vehicle operator portal, we call it CVOP, which is a system geared specifically for the trucking industry, and it does require a login. What we do is we provide, this is actually our first attempt to provide any forecasting. In the past, what we've done is just provide current weather conditions, but we kind of broke the mold a little bit, and we're now providing these forecasts. They're targeted at three of the problem areas that I mentioned: the winds, the visibility, and the surface conditions. And we provide 12, 24, 36, and 48-hour impact forecasts, which are available in both map and text format. And we also provide information about National Weather Service watches and warnings. We not only attempt to forecast what the weather conditions will be, what we're really trying to do is provide information about how our treatment will impact that forecast. So if you will, we have a manpower issue, we want to forecast that as well. We may not be able to get as many people on a roadway to clear it, for example. We've created three interfaces to manage and use the system. First, we have a forecaster interface, and I'm not going to show you the forecaster or the ITS admin interface, but I'll just talk to you a little bit about them. In essence, what we've done is created an interface such that the forecaster can manage the forecast for each road segment. We've also created an ITS admin interface that allows us to send important bulletins to the CVOs, and it allows us to authorize users to participate in the program. But the most important is the user interface, and I'll show you some screenshots in the following slide. This is basically what it looks like. Let me see if I can grab this pointer. It's not moving. Do I need to hold that down?
No, yes, you have to continue to hold the mouse down as you move it.
Tell me that and I forgot. Thanks. This is actually some slides from a real event that happened last February, between February 21st and I think 23rd. In essence, what I'm going to bring to your attention is that we allow people to select whether they want to see visibility, wind, or surface conditions, or default to the worst-case condition. They can select whether they want to see it in the 0 to 12-hour time frame, 12 to 24, 24 to 36, or 36 to 48-hour time frames. And as we kind of show you how this event progressed, this was the 12 to 24-hour time frame. The next time frame, I think, is the 12 to 24-hour time frame, and you can see the conditions are starting to change. On the map. Let's see, advance this a little bit. Again, the conditions are deteriorating again in the 24 to 36 hour time frame we were forecasting. And in the end, this is what we were forecasting. You can see the National Weather Service alerts were popping up virtually all over the three of the interstate routes. This text-based slide simply shows you that we do provide the information in both, also in a text-based format. We did that in case the CVOs needed to hang it on a wall or deliver it to somebody with authority. The map-based interface doesn't really lend itself well to that. And I'll tell you, I guess, a little bit about the future of this. What we intend to do is provide a wind graph so that the CVOs have the opportunity to see time frame for when we think, hour by hour, the winds were going to peak and diminish. And we also plan this year to add email and text alerts through a process that we call we use a system from GovDelivery where we can allow them to subscribe to individual segments and be alerted, for example, when there's going to be a red condition type of event on any one of the routes that they are most interested in. We also found that there was a side benefit to building this in that it helped us within YDOT use it internally. We have managed to figure out pretty quickly how we can manage our own manpower by forecasting these events. So with that, I turn it over to Rod, who's worked with us a great deal on the project and who's been instrumental in telling us what would help CVOs in making them more successful.
Vince, thank you. Thanks for allowing me to be a part here. And Paul, I'll do my best to avoid any Walmart acronyms. We live by those as much as anybody else. But over here in the Western Regional Operations Center, also known as the ROC, we dispatch 650 drivers from central Nebraska all the way over to the coast to include the Pacific Northwest. And as Vince mentioned, we met at the I-80 Coalition, and I'll just make a quick plug for the coalition there, just as myself and other private sector transportation companies were invited to that. It allowed us to create the liaisons with the different state DOTs that are along the I-80 corridor, as well as just provide input, and we've already seen how that input has turned into action and processes across the corridor. With that, it's interesting from our side to see how much the Departments of Transportation and those entities are involved in keeping freight moving across the country, and definitely something that's appreciated by our side. For me, it's also been a consolidated source of information, and that tends to fall into this whole incident slash weather part that Vince is talking about, that as we work with our dispatchers here, we call them LLMs, logistic load managers, there is myriad different sources of weather and information out there. For me, the key part of this website that Vince spoke of is the impact-based forecasting. And not a knock against NWS or NOAA, but if NWS tells us that there's going to be 6 inches of snow tomorrow in District 6, that doesn't necessarily have or mean as much to us as if we see from this website that there's a potential for deteriorating weather to the point where the road may close. We can then plan on that, and we can, from a strategic standpoint, and that's what I really like about the website, is that 48-hour look ahead, that from a strategic planning standpoint, we can, what we call pull ahead, we can try and get the freight into the stores ahead of the storm. If in the middle of a storm, we can, if things are averse enough, we can hold back. And in some cases, it's very expensive to do so, but in some cases on our east-west freight, we can do what we call route around and use some of the other interstates, I-90 in some cases, but I-70 also through Colorado, again, depending on how the storm is doing. But for us, the tactical advantage as well is we've got onboard computers with our drivers. We're able to feed near real-time information to the drivers, just what we expect in the next 12 hours based on what we're seeing from the website here. So we've got both sides of that. And from a personal standpoint, as I walk in the morning and know of an event, within 5 minutes through this site, it's very streamlined, it's very quick and to the point. Within 5 minutes, I can pretty well know what we're expecting for the next few days. And then the LLMs tend to have it on their screen ongoing, and they refresh it every 20, 30 minutes or so, just kind of to stay on top of things and affect their more tactical decisions. Vince spoke of the wind graph as well, and we've had some back and forth with that also. And if I can tell a driver that this afternoon on your dispatch headed along I-25, you can expect winds in excess of 50 miles per hour, that driver, as captain of his ship, then can make a decision on where he would stop without getting into that area and being one of those folks that you saw in the picture there. So with that, again, Vince, appreciate the time, and anything else I can provide, please let me know.
Yeah, this is Paul again, and the advantage of being one of the speakers is I get to ask questions when the others can't. But I do want to say I attended participated in a TIM workshop in Cheyenne, and I had an eye-opening experience with some of the challenges with traffic incident management relative to the roadways out there. The wind, the blowing over vehicles, by the wind is just something we don't have in Boston, where I'm from. Also, the some of the other issues relative to when the road is, the interstate's closed, they put a gate across the road and then they close the roadway. And then the road is closed based on when the towns fill up with tractor trailers, and that's how they gear where they should close the road. So the town fills up, then they go back to the next town and close the road. I found that to be a very interesting as well. But Vince and Rod, if you could just for a second, 1 second, don't you have a program where you work together to develop a lot of these things, and you communicate back and forth? Is there notifications given from the DOT to Walmart? I thought I had remembered that when I was in Cheyenne and toward your TMC.
Well, I actually remember it well. I attended the TIM meeting with you in Cheyenne, and what we have, and I think you're referring to, is we have what we call ECAR, or Enhanced Citizen Assisted Reporting. It's a program that we've developed that where we solicit feedback from drivers, whether they be commercial drivers or private citizens, to help us report accurate and timely road conditions. So we've worked with Rod, and we're hoping that someday that they will work with us to get some information from the Walmart drivers. But we have a number of other commercial vehicle operators and commercial firms that have dedicated a good portion of their staff to this program. And again, We give them, in essence, a telephone number that they can call in. They can report conditions. We'll feed them information back. And it's a really, really effective program. I think we have, and if memory serves, I think we're in the neighborhood of 700 to 800 volunteers who are helping us report road conditions.
Yeah, that, and I think that's a tremendous opportunity. Programs like that across the country, where the commercial freight people are interacting with the DOT, the traffic management centers, where we're giving notification to the freight community, and the freight community is helping us out, especially where we don't have equipment, which is most of the country, quite frankly, outside the metropolitan area. So I think there's opportunities there to work together, and I hope we can find a way to close the gap on that.
All right.
Well, thanks, Vince.
Yes, thank you, Vince and Rod, and thank you, Paul, for further enlightening us there. We'll now move on to our next presentation, given by Paul Clark of the Florida DOT. So, Paul, you can go ahead when you're ready. Paul, are you there?
I'm sorry, my phone was on mute.
That's okay.
Thank y'all for allowing me to speak today. I'm going to talk a little bit on the American Association of State and Highway Traffic Officials, ASH TOWS, that they're towing a recovery partnership program that we've got ongoing there. What ASH TOW does is they have a technology implementation group which looks at and decides where there are high payoff areas and such in different areas that DOTs work with, and where we can get big benefits and spread good practices around the nation. What we try to do in the TIG, or the Technology Implementation Group, is to accelerate the adoption of these good programs, and we try to go to our peers at the U.S. Transportation agencies and just kind of educate them on these practices, and I'll be talking about one of those practices today. Today, the technical group we're going to be talking about is the Towing and Recovery Service Partnership Group. And what we've done in that group, and we've had an initial meeting and several teleconferences discuss different things that are ongoing around the nation with tow practices and such as that. But what we're doing is we're looking at how the help with between the public and private partnerships. We're looking at different protocols, clearance time strategies, and training and incentives to quickly clear large vehicle crashes on the interstate systems or the road systems. We're trying to we're always looking at responder safety, like Paul had stated earlier, but we're looking at those responders and trying to educate them on these practices. A lot of our towing laws and classifications of wreckers and such have not changed in quite some time in several states, or in most of our states around the country. They've not kept up with how our freight and such moves, and the size of equipment and such as that, and the needed equipment to move those larger vehicles. It's also what we're looking at is specific equipment, because the equipment that we had 20 years ago is totally different than towing equipment that's in use now, and also the operator training is some of the other things that we look at as well. And what we're trying to do with the initiative that we've got ongoing is trying to identify those practices that will help us safely restore the traffic flow after an incident. What we're trying to do is get that crashed vehicle off the road as quickly as possible. Some of the things that were, like I stated, that we've already got some highly innovative programs in several states. They're working. They're cutting down clearance times. And what that does to the freight community is, by us quickly clearing those incidents, it allows that freight to get moving again. In other words, we don't want one crash semi-truck holding up 100 in the queue, waiting and delaying those on-time deliveries and such as that. And it's helping it make it safer for motorists and responders, because we're cutting down on the time that our roadway is closed. And it's also big thing that we want to identify and we're trying to identify with our state partners and others is that even though we've got several innovative programs around the nation, and we're going to discuss a few of those in a little bit more, you can actually take these programs and customize them to your jurisdiction's needs. There might be something in the Florida program that's very innovative that will work in your area, and at the same time, there could be a component in the Georgia program that you want to combine as well. So it's totally customizable to your area and the people that you work with there. The ASTRO team is, just to let you know that at the end of this presentation, you'll see a lot of names of people who are involved with this TIG group with ASTRO, and we're all available to help you out. So if you have any specific questions, not only you can call me, but you can also call anybody on the team. We're all willing to help out because we're all trying to promote quick clearance. Rapid response and quick clearance is just the single most effective incident management strategy, and that's found in FHWA's document there. And what we've got is what we got to do as responders is we understand that there's responsible parties for loads and such as that, but at the same time we also understand that the movement of goods and people is primary importance there. And we're trying to clear the roadway as quickly as possible so we can get everybody back to moving. If you can look here, you know, we have a lot of experiences out there. Semi-truck rollover, in the previous slides you saw that the wind had caused a lot of trucks to blow over there in Wyoming. And what we have in a lot of places is rotational tows. In other words, the law enforcement or whoever will have a list of tow truck companies, and they'll call the next company on the list. Some of the issues that you can run into with that situation is maybe that company does not have the proper equipment to upright that vehicle or such. So it's ensuring that we have the proper tools on the roadway for our responders to clear that road quickly. And you know, it's there's disincentives in a lot of these programs as well, and we'll cover that also. You can see here, this is a 25-ton Holmes 750. It was a standard in the industry in the 1960s and 70s, and you still see a lot of these out on the road today, but there has been a lot of changes. There's 50-ton rotational wreckers, there's 30-ton rotational wreckers, there's straight wreckers. I mean, the needs have really changed over the years, and like I said, a lot of our legislation has not kept up with the requirements that we've got on the road. And we do need to make some changes with some of our laws to make sure that we're classifying these larger wreckers. Even though a company might have the proper equipment and you know, to do the job, one of the biggest things that we stress as part of this is you need your operators to be trained as well. If you look here, they're trying to upright this vehicle here. And even though we had the proper equipment, due to improper connections to the vehicles and such, we've actually turned over two of the wreckers, which has caused even more delay trying to get this scene cleared. A lot of these programs are performance-based programs. What we do is we have certain standards that we're asking the wreckers to hold up to. In other words, we set time criteria for these wreckers to respond, and we also set equipment criteria for them to respond with. In other words, we don't want just the wrecker to come out there and then him get there, upright a load, and all of a sudden we determine we need a sweeper or a Dempsey dumpster or something to haul that off. We make those requirements up front. So whenever he responds, he's responding as a total package. And we specify those things, those requirements for the participating operators. It's performance-based. In other words, they have to perform to achieve the bonuses. Now, one thing I do want to state is that the bonuses do not cover for the tow. The tow company still goes to the responsible party for the cost of moving these large pieces of equipment. Like I said, it's performance-based incentives for quick clearance. Professional towing and recovery companies are paid a bonus for expedited clearance, and we're going to show an example of some of the Florida's bonus program in a few minutes. Here are three of the states who have some excellent programs. One is Florida's program. It came into conception in 2004. It was, to my knowledge, one of the first programs around the nation. It's the RISC program, or the Rapid Incident Scene Clearance Program. The next program that came in, and that program has since gone statewide in Florida. The next program we got is the Georgia CHIP program that came into effect in 2007. It's the Towing and Recovery Incentive Program. It mirrored a lot of things of the Florida RISC program, but they did make some additional requirements for training for the operators and such, and has increased the quality of the process there. And also in 2007, the Blockbuster program in Washington State came into effect. Like I said before, it's specification-based requirements for participants. In each one of these states, you spell out the particular equipment they need. For example, in Florida, we require a 50-ton and a 30-ton wrecker. One of them has to be a rotator. And what this does by specifying these particular pieces of equipment, like I said, it ensures the proper piece of equipment gets on scene at the right time. Also, the personnel. We ensure that there's a certain level of training of these personnel and that they know what they're doing with these pieces of equipment. And one of the slides that we saw before, even though they had the proper equipment, they didn't have the proper training, so we ended up having two wreckers turn over. So that training is a key component there as well. And one of the things that we also have to do here is not only do we have to assure that the wrecker operators are also knowledgeable and they know what's going on, we also have to inform the responders of these programs so they understand what these programs are for, what these programs can do, and you know, they understand, well, this might be a typical rotational wrecker type situation. I need to call in this specific piece of equipment for a large vehicle. And it ensures that we get the proper equipment out there when it's needed. What we're trying to do, though, with these performance-based towing programs, of course, is we're trying to cut the response time down, and that's one of the things, you know, that can take quite some time is whenever you have a major incident and you're calling in a specific piece of equipment, you know, a company could say, yeah, I've got that equipment, but it could take them anywhere from 90 minutes to get that to even longer to get that piece of equipment on scene, just depending upon where it's at in their jurisdiction. And what we do is we require specific response times for that equipment to show up in the to the crash scene. We also provide a roadway clearance time. You know, we're trying to look at that roadway clearance time and say, okay, once you're given the scene and you're told to operate, here's your time frame. You've got to be able to clear that incident in. We're trying to cut down and trying to get these scenes off the side of the road. So even if we take and open up as many travel lanes as possible, put the incident on the shoulder, whatever we need to do to get the travel lanes open. And we're trying to look at clear that total incident time. And what it results in is dollar savings from the congestion reduction. And also it just allows the people to get their freight where it needs to go, and that's really, really key. This is kind of an example of why these programs work. If you see here, we've got an accident that occurred around 1:21 p.m. Is what the time here. The wrecker backs up. He's there. He's starting to get hooked up. He's relocating at 1:23. He's pulling the equipment out of the way. Then we've got a sweeper coming in at 1:26. Clearing the roadway of any debris, anything that could cause tire damage or such as that. And then we've got the roadway ready for traffic by 1:28. And that's really, really important. If you look at the total time frames, the hookup is 1:21, and we've got got it cleared by 1:28, so 7 minutes. And all that is based upon having the proper equipment on scene when we're ready to go. We still will need to ensure that that law enforcement and such can do their crash reports and such as that, and they have adequate time to do that. But with photogrammetry and different things that are out there now, a lot of times they can go in and take pictures and such as that and do all their calculations back in the office with the computer. But if you notice that we don't have the actual vehicle off scene here, if you look in the upper left-hand corner of the picture, the tractor-trailer trailer or travel trailer or whatever was in this particular scene is still there, but it's off the road and all lanes are clear. We can work that from off the travel lanes. So the travel lanes are open back up to traffic. If you look at the clearance times, and this is really impressive, Georgia has done some great things when capturing data and information on their program. They've got some, if you look at the initial total clearance time in 2007, they're running about 269 minutes to clear a major incident that involved a semi-truck or such as that. And you can see there's variations over the years, with their best year being in 1989, or in 2009 with 89 minutes, and in 2012 they're around 105, but you can see a drastic reduction in the time it takes to clear those incidents. And that's really, really key. There's a lot of factors on these large incidents and that can affect these times, but Georgia has done a great job of cutting down their total incident clearance time and getting that roadway back open to traffic. And that's very, very key to keeping traffic and freight moving. This is they also did an evaluation in 2011, and this is just, you know, to put dollars to it. They estimate they're saving $456,000 per incident, and that's just amazing, and that's on congestion and such as that. It's a savings of 71%, and they did a financial benefit trip is over $9 million in 2008-2009. It's 11-to-1 benefit. So the amount that we're paying as far as for these incentives, the benefit far outweighs that small amount that we're putting into these programs. This kind of gives an incentive benchmark idea of what we utilize here in Florida. What happens is we have an event occur. It's identified as a risk event or a rapid impact scene clearance event. We notify the risk provider, and he has 60 minutes to respond. If he hits that within that 60-minute benchmark, we'll give him a flat rate of $600 for just getting there in expedited fashion. And like I stated, that is with all the equipment that we require in our contract. After he arrives on scene, a lot of times what we have is you notice there's a little dead spot there. We might have something ongoing where a trooper is looking at the scene, he's managing the scene, he's getting it prepared. At that time, generally what's occurring is your wrecker operators are looking at the loads, seeing how he should hook it up, but no clocks are running at that point, except for your total incident time. But no clocks are running against the contractor for that. And once we get that scene where it's available and we can give it to that wrecker operator, that's when the next clock starts, and we give them the notice to proceed. At that time in Florida, we're giving them 90 minutes to clear that major incident. And if they can meet that clearance time, we give them a $2,500 bonus. Now, in certain situations, we have to add additional specialized equipment, and we have that pre-identified in our contract as well. And if we call for that specialized equipment, we'll actually give them an additional $1,000 bonus. And that's equipment above and beyond what's on our standard call-in. Once we meet that 90-minute goal, or if they go over 90 minutes, and they're between, and they don't go over 180 minutes after that, we don't give them any bonus. They don't receive that $2,500 bonus. They don't receive that $600 flat fee. Like I said, this is an incentive-based program. If they can't meet the times, and sometimes there's extenuating circumstances. We understand that. But if they can't meet those times, we're not going to give them that bonus because it's all about quick clearance. And if we go over the 180-minute mark there, we can assess liquidated damages. Now, in most situations in Florida, to my knowledge, we've never assessed liquidated damages just because sometimes we run into issues that we did not identify initially whenever we called this risk event. For example, all of a sudden we get a risk event, we call the contractor out, and it ends up being a fatality investigation. Now that messes the whole time frame up there. So in those particular things, we generally waive those liquidated damages, but we do have the ability to assess liquidated damages on the wrecker operator. This kind of shows what's occurring in Florida as far as our incident times. We do not have any pre-risk data, to my knowledge. But in 2009, on average, whenever we have to call in a risk event, we're running about 156.3 minutes total incident duration. down to 135.3 minutes, and that's a big jump there. And if you look, one of the big areas that we've shaved time in, though, was in our notice to proceed, and that's really, really key, is we want to get them on scene. We need the officers to do their job, but at the same time, we need to give them the reins to take hold of that vehicle and get it moved out as quickly as possible. Risk has been very, very successful in Florida, and it continues to be that way, and we've got some great people around the state who deploy it out and very effectively. Like I said, these are the Towing and Recovery Service Partnership Lead States teams. Bill Legg of Washington State, he's a great guy. He'll be willing to help. Of course, Paul Jodin. Gary Ogletree in Tennessee, they're looking at doing some things there in Tennessee. David Fink in Texas, they're looking at doing some things in Texas as well. Emmanuel Jackson with the Georgia Department of Transportation, great asset. And Gary Melseps with Delcan. Gary used to be over the Georgia program, and he left to the consulting firm several years ago. But Gary is a great asset, and he's willing to help in these areas as well. And like I stated, please feel free to call any of us, and we'll be glad to assist how we can. But if you do want some more information, we do have a web page up for our group, and you can go to the tigtransportation.org and look for our TRSP web page, and we'll be glad to help you out. Like I said, if you need us to come out and meet with your practitioners and such, we'll be glad to do that as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Paul. Our final presentation will be given by Rusty James of the Missouri Department of Transportation. And Rusty, you can go ahead when you're ready.
Okay, thank you. I want to say how much I appreciate the opportunity to help out with this. The Missouri Department of Transportation has always been concerned about keeping traffic flowing on our highways, in particular, our main corridors, I-70, I-44, and then I-35, and now 71 Highway. And there are a number of major corridors that we are concerned about, and back in December of 2006, there was a major event which, in effect, shut down the I-70 and portions of I-44. When that happened, there really wasn't much in the way of planning. We had vehicles that ran out of fuel. There was need for food and water, things like that, out on the highway. So there's really been a big push at managing traffic incidents on the highways through in the metro areas and across the state. One of the main methods that we use to get information out to motorists and in particular the commercial vehicle operators, because they do amount to a large portion of the traffic that's on our major corridors across the state, is the Missouri Traveler Information Map. And that map, it's online at the website there at the bottom of the slide, and it shows detours due to road work, incidents, weather, things like that, and it also has links to KC Scout, Gateway Guide, and Ozarks Traffic, which are the three main traffic management centers across the state of Missouri. You'll also find links on there to motor carrier service, and I'll get to that in a second. But it has a great deal of information that is easily available, and it's easy to understand, so when they get on that map, they can tell that there's a problem and what they need to do to reroute what they're doing. The motor carrier services at MoDOT has a lot of information for motor carriers, and they're continually forcing information out so that they have the latest information as close to real time as we can. You know, there's a lot of time sensitive freight out there, and the longer that freight is held up on the highway due to an incident, the higher the cost to society. So we're very aware of that. We try to make sure that we get the information out as close to real time as we can. On the Motor Carrier Service website, which is off the link of the MoDOT website, there's another map that I'll show you in just a second. It has to do with restrictions and closures for commercial vehicles, and that's overweight, oversized loads, so that we don't end up with loads that are larger than usual getting somewhere they can't get out of. There's also information on their safe parking locations, and that's particularly important when we have a problem. In 2011, during the winter, we ended up closing I-70 from all the way across the state. So not only does that cause a big problem just getting traffic off the highway, but then trying to find a place where we can put it. And commercial vehicles are a little tough to park. You just can't pull them off and park them like you can a car. So there's locations on there for safe parking, and as you can see, there's quite a few oversized, overweight, restricted roadways in Missouri. So that, you know, those are things that they want to make sure they're aware of. This, they also have on the motor carrier website, we're going to have the latest news updates, anything at all that, that pertains to commercial vehicle operation that, that the state can force out, we try to do that. Another way that we provide information to the motor carriers is through our dynamic message signs. And we have, in the metro areas in Kansas City, St. Louis, and Springfield, there are a number of message boards that we use regularly as part of the traffic management centers. But we also have message boards across our major corridors, on I-70 between Kansas City and St. Louis, on I-44 between St. Louis and Springfield, and then on over to the state line. And we also have one I-35 and I-29 between Kansas City and Iowa, so that we're able to get that information out as quickly as we can and provide information if there's a need to detour a route, so that the information is out there quickly. They can make decisions based on the what has occurred and hopefully not hold up the freight or cause any further congestion that is absolutely necessary. The message boards, I think, are probably one of the best things that, that we have done across the state as far as providing information, because it does force information out. Freight motor carrier drivers are a lot like the other motorists that we encounter out on the roadways. They don't get their information in the traditional forms. They're not listening to, always to AM, FM radio. We don't have the ability to get information out to them as easily as it used to be, especially with social media and things like that. So if we have the, we have the message boards out there, so we can force the information out in a form that, that we are pretty much guaranteed they're going to see. The motor carrier also uses a system of e-updates. That we have a database that has about 1,000 industry subscribers that we force information out to whenever there's an incident that's going to tie up the roadway for any significant period of time. This information is forced out, and it's largely email based. It is a large database, and one of our big partners in that is the Missouri Trucking Association and also the Missouri Dump Trucking Association. They use this information a lot to keep their clients on the road and operating. But it also goes to large trucking companies, and I know that Walmart gets this information, and some of the other larger trucking companies in Missouri and outside of Missouri, so that they can route their drivers electronically, so that it minimizes the congestion and minimizes their downtime due to any sort of incident on the road. MoDOT is also getting ready to do a constant contact process. It's a lot like retailers use. The nice thing about it is it's still email based. It's still going to force out information to our subscribers. But some of the information that gets sent out there is information that the drivers may not want, or some of the people that receive these alerts may not want them. So it's a simple system to unsubscribe in the event that they don't need the information or want it. One of the things that in Kansas City and St. Louis also, we have web alerts for our traffic management centers, KC Scout and Gateway Guide. By subscribing to those, the drivers, if they know they're just passing through the Kansas City or St. Louis area, and they do that on a regular basis, they can predefine their routes on there. So, and then if there is an incident that occurs, the information is sent out electronically so that they know that they are not going to be able to use their regular route. And we don't certainly don't want them paying attention to a mobile device while they're operating a motor vehicle anymore, and we want anyone in a car to do that. But if they have the opportunity to check that information before they get into the truck, it certainly can minimize some hassle when they're out on the road. The constant contact system will be out shortly, and MoDOT will let everybody know when that's coming out. We also use social media quite a bit. One of those, we have MoDOT and motor carriers both have Facebook pages, and we know that the majority of the public, I shouldn't say the majority, it seems like a majority anyway, uses social media more than they use any of the more traditional forms of information systems. So we're very aware of that, and we try to make sure that we get the information out as quickly as we can through social media. On Facebook, what they have found is that the drivers pay more attention to the motor carrier's webpage than the MoDOT webpage, so we make sure we keep that updated with information that will keep them moving while they're out on the road. We also use Twitter a lot. We use it in Kansas City and St. Louis and the Ozarks Traffic Management Center. That's one of the things that's constantly updated. If there's something going on, it's automatically sent out to Twitter so that anyone that's following MoDOT or the motor carrier Twitter site can get the information that they need as quickly as possible. And again, the goal is to minimize the congestion and to minimize any time that they're down due to an incident on the roadway. In the Kansas City area especially, as I'm most familiar with as far as the traffic management program and traffic incident management program, we have a good program. We work close with our partners to mitigate incidents as quickly as we can. But while that's going on, we know that if we're not providing the information to our customers in a fashion that we know they're going to get it, whether that's a traditional media source or whether it's social media, we know that the cost to society is extremely high. So we try to minimize that as best we can, keep everybody as aware as they can be. We also, I've titled this traditional because it is a radio source, but you know, the people that are traveling on the roadways a lot, and not just motor carriers, but anyone who travels a lot on the roadway, we find that traditional radio, AM, FM radio, is not their main source of information. They're listening to XM radio, and since that is a source of information, motor carriers tries to make sure that Sirius XM gets the information regarding any closures or restrictions or incidents so that it's forced out over their radio to anyone who subscribes to Sirius radio and listens to the Road Dog trucking station. That's just another way that we can get this information out as quickly as we can. And while we're talking about, I know I'm talking about MoDOT, but KC Scout is the Traffic Management Center for the Kansas City area, which is a cooperative with KDOT. You know, and in the Kansas City area, in addition to what MoDOT does with motor carrier services, Kansas provides the 511 system, which also has a traveler map, and they have a system of e-updates to anyone that subscribes. And I know that, again, there is a representative from Walmart on here. Walmart and some of the other larger trucking companies do subscribe to that information, and that information is forced out as close to real-time as it can be, just like MoDOT does, so that the motor carriers that are driving across Missouri or into Kansas or driving across Kansas into Missouri gets the most up-to-date information as quickly as they can. And I have to take the time to make a plug for the Traffic Incident Management Network, and that is a computer-based network of people that are out here and managing traffic incidents across the country. I've put the website down there. I encourage everyone that's listening on this website, if they're on this webinar, if they haven't already joined the TIM network, that they do that. I think it gives everyone who's involved in managing incidents, whether they would be a practitioner like me or one of our customers or someone in the trucking industry that has certainly has a stake in managing traffic incidents better, I encourage you to join that. There's a monthly newsletter that comes out. It's very informational. It provides the information on training, technology, recent incidents, things like that, things that really are of interest to anyone who's out here on the highways and dealing with incidents. But I encourage everyone, it takes just a second to sign up, and it's a very valuable resource. And with that, that's all I have.